All right. Open your Bibles to Deuteronomy chapter 5. I'm so thankful I get to speak one more time on the subject of rest. Yes, deep breath and kind of relax, roll your shoulders. We're gonna take in this theme of rest. In fact, I get one more time today to talk about it, and then I get my relaxation, my vacation to see my family and my wife's family in Washington State. We leave tomorrow at 4 a.m. And in Dirk style, we go straight there. So it takes about 32 hours, my wife said, and that's with the stops and along the way. But we drive straight. We got a lot of drivers, but it's brutal and yet fun. So anyway, we're going to rest. But I want to talk to you about this theme of rest. So turning your Bibles to Deuteronomy chapter 5. And while your finger is in Deuteronomy chapter 5, let me just give you kind of like a flyover. Exodus chapter 1, remember last week we looked at the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments is first found in Exodus 20, okay? But Exodus chapter 1 through Exodus chapter 13, the people of Israel are in slavery in Egypt. Chapter 13 is when they finally get to go out of slavery. Chapter 14 is on the way out. Pharaoh and his army come after them. And you know the story. They finally escape through the Red Sea, and the Red Sea comes down upon their enemies, and they are no more going to chase them. They get to the other side, chapter 15, and sing a song for the entire chapter. Chapter 16 is when the manna and the water and the provisions come. Chapter 20 is when God gives the Ten Commandments. And the Ten Commandments, and the fourth commandment is to set aside that day, Sabbath rest, because you are my people. That Sabbath rest, as we have learned in this series, was a sign for the people of Israel that they belong to God. By keeping it, you are stating that we have a relationship with God, with me, says God. And the reason that you set aside one day out of seven was that he looks back to Genesis chapter 2 and says, because God worked 6 days and rested on the seventh, I want you to do the same. So you're to do that because of the pattern that God set out in the beginning. When you get to Deuteronomy 5, that's after 40 more years. Because the story is that people that were led out of Egypt, they just could not trust the Lord. They rebelled against God, and God finally said, fine, you're not going to make it to the promised land. You're going to stay in the wilderness. You're going to march around, but you're going to be here. You're going to be nomadic the rest of your life. And when that generation dies off, I'm going to bring your children into the land of promise. 40 years later, Deuteronomy. So now it's a restatement of the law. It's a restatement of the Ten Commandments. And here you have it, Deuteronomy chapter 5. But look I want you to notice the reason behind one day out of seven. Because Exodus was, because God rested, you rest. Listen in. Chapter 5, verse 12. Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your ox or your donkey or any of your livestock or your sojourner who is within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. Verse 15. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Okay, it's enriched with a little bit more. It's not just because God rested on the seventh day. Now I want you to set aside one day because you were once slaves. Now you've been emancipated. He fills in the meaning of the Sabbath day with a whole lot more. Your exodus out of Egypt. I want that day to be a reminder of what has been done for you. It was to commemorate God's mighty act of deliverance every week, freedom from slavery. That's pretty good. It's kind of what we do every week when we gather. We are commemorating the exodus out of slavery to sin and what Christ has done in bringing that about. This is a celebration of our exodus, and the cross is the centerpiece for us. That was when our slavery was broken. And so you see it here. I love the fact that it was to impress upon them every week what was done for them in through Moses, God rescuing them. They were to celebrate their freedom from slavery and worship the one who rescued them, God, not Moses. This was to help them enjoy rest. And I am going to suggest that setting aside a day helps us learn this rhythm, helps us understand the gospel and all the things that Christ has done to a greater degree. So it goes from here all the way down in our life. And the more that happens, the more that you will know how to rest. Ultimately, who cares? I mean, we got to answer, okay, John, but the Sabbath laws are not for us today like they are for Israel. Agreed. So if you work on the Sabbath day, it's not a sin. You're not going to be stoned to death, you know. But it is a gift, as we talked about last week. It is a gift to be enjoyed by the Lord. And here's the reason why I come to this. I don't think we rest well as a people. I'll personalize it. I know I don't rest well. And I've been working to learn a new rhythm to allow me to understand the gospel to a greater degree. Because busyness, busyness makes us thin, shallow, superficial people. Because we don't have time to reflect on who we are, where we're going, why we do what we do. And the Christian faith needs that time to reflect. Listen, the spinal cord that connects you to a relationship with God is faith. You have to pause to think, to remember, to stand upon things that are spoken for your faith to grow. If you stay busy and you don't set aside time to think and to ponder, to pray, and to grow that way, you will not grow. In America, from 1973 to 1990, so a period of 17 years, here's some stats for you, okay? The average work week went up from 41 hours a week to 47 hours a week. So it went up 6 hours on average in a 17-year period, okay? Which is not bad. I mean, 47 is not going to kill you. It's a lot different than in 1830 when the average hour was 68 hours a week. Try that one on. At the same time, in that 17-year window, the amount of sleep average of most Americans went down 37%. So work went up, the amount of sleep went down. But add this. Something happened in 1990. Something happened, was introduced to our society that made a huge change in the way we live. Some of you know what I'm talking about. I think the first time I saw it was 1991. I saw a cell phone in a car. I thought we were living large by having a cell phone. And that changed our life. Because now, add the amount of hours that people work from home now to that 47. Because it's always, your smartphone is always in reach. You can get a little bit more done. We rarely unplug. And we wonder why people have breakdowns, mental breakdowns, and so many are on psychotropic drugs just to cope with life. And could it be, at least many of you could be helped by a better pattern and rhythm of life? One that includes rest. Could it be that part of the reason is we just don't know how to rest? I believe so. Because are we really capable Were we ever meant to handle 24-hour news from around the world? I mean, to be privy as it's happening to all the crises around the world. And we get access to that, but can we emotionally handle it and even process it, or continual stimulation of videos and feeds and video gaming and our mind-numbing updates from Facebook and the pressure to like or to comment? I mean, it's just constantly hitting us from all around. Some of you go, well, that's because you're old, John. I mean, I'm in the new generation, and I can... Okay, so if that's the case, some of you still think you're Superman or Wonder Woman. Maybe in 10 years, I just want you to make a mental note that I had a series, a four-week series on rest. And when you get to a place where you think you need it, come back and listen to me. What I'm advocating is that you set aside one day a week, preferably Sunday, though it's not required, but where you rest from your labor to commemorate our freedom in Christ. I'm going to call it, instead of Sabbath rest, Jesus rest, because Jesus is the source of rest. Jesus is. Not recreation, not quiet moments, even though those help, Jesus. And that you are remembering that you do not have to work for God's approval, for his favor, for his love. On that day, you could just recognize that the work has already been done in Jesus Christ. Rituals like a weekly Jesus rest can just pound the truth deeper in your heart. That's all. So the people of Israel were commanded to set aside a weekly Sabbath as a sign that they were committed to God. But it was also a visible act of resistance to Pharaoh, which is my first point. They were to, number one, resist Pharaoh. And for us, a weekly day off, in a sense, is us resisting the pressure and the demands of Pharaoh and all the little pharaohs in our life. Resist Pharaoh. So Egypt started off to be a refuge, a place of refuge from the famine. Remember Jacob, the patriarch, his sons sold off their youngest brother into slavery and then lied about it. They couldn't stand the fact that the father, Jacob, liked, favored Joseph more than them and pampered him, so they got rid of him and said that he was dead. He got eaten by a wild animal, but they really sold him off. But years later, a severe famine struck the land so that they were forced to go to Egypt to get food. And that's where they met up with their abandoned brother, oh, so many years ago, because abandoned brother became, by God's miraculous hand, the vice president of Egypt, and the one that was handing out and administrating all of the food. Amazing. And so they all moved down there to be protected and cared for, and they stayed, and they multiplied. And generations later, their protected status is taken away, and they become the workforce. In fact, the worked forced. They were king slaves. Because Pharaoh was afraid of them, they were getting so many of them, and he started to wear them out, and he was oppressing them. And if you think about slavery, okay, we have it as a blight in our world, in our history. Slaves don't get time off. They're always on, 24/7. Year after year after year, no vacations. You see, rest is a byproduct of freedom. That's what it is. And Pharaoh had great ambitions to build cities with monuments that spoke about his great deeds. And so someone has to get to work. And slaves don't rest so that Pharaoh can rest. If slaves rest, Pharaoh gets troubled and frustrated and loses sleep, and you wouldn't want that. In fact, Exodus 1:13 tells us that Pharaoh worked them ruthlessly and made their lives bitter. Translated, long hours, back-breaking work under the hot sun, whipped if you slowed down. Exodus 5:4, here's the Pharaoh talking to Moses and Aaron. Moses and Aaron, why do you take the people away from their work? Get back to your burdens. Verse 6, same chapter. Here's Pharaoh talking to his administrators of the workforce. You shall no longer give the people straw to make bricks as in the past. Let them go and gather straw for themselves. For the number of bricks that they made in the past, you shall impose on them. You shall by no means reduce it, for they are idle. Translated, they're lazy. Here again, Pharaoh to Moses. But he said, you are idle. You are lazy. You are lazy. That is why you say, let us go and sacrifice to the Lord. Go now and work. Get to work. Stop being lazy. That's what a Pharaoh does. And the people of Israel were building supply cities for Pharaoh. Places to store more stuff, bigger containers, bigger storage units. It's the whole economy built on more. Does that sound familiar? We will work to the bone just to get a little bit more so that we can give to our kids more. But I don't think our lives are richer and fuller by more stuff. I just don't. I mean, I don't know where you are, but I don't think that necessarily translates to richer and fuller lives. And even today, employers will entice you to work more. How do they do that? Will give you more hours. You can work overtime and make time and a half. If you work on Saturday, time and a half. Some will give you two times your hourly salary if you work on Sunday. I just heard about that. Because they're going to entice you to work more, because we all need more, right? But at the expense of what? Our family? Our faith? Mark Buchanan, in his book, The Rest of God, that's a great book, I commend it to you, tells a story about his wife's grandmother, who lived in Alaska in the 1950s, when gold rush still lingered in the air, and probably still does, you know, and everyone up there is dredging the riverbeds to try to find gold dust or small little bits and pieces, or they bore a hole into the side of the mountain to see if they can find that yellowy material. Because gold is all over in Alaska, it seems. Well, she had a garden in the back, and there was one big boulder right in the center of it, and it was too heavy to move, so she had to kind of arrange her garden around this rock. I guess rocks weren't, preferred. Now they're preferred. You bring in boulders, and it costs a lot to bring in a boulder in your garden. But she didn't like that boulder in her garden, so she started to beautify it. How do you beautify a boulder? You start sanding it. She began sanding this boulder. And as she was sanding it, she saw a little faint sliver of gold, which got her excited. So she really put her whole weight into sanding this boulder. And the more that she scrubbed, the more she saw this gold dust starting to appear on this rock. Well, she got gold fever. I mean, she thought, oh, I'm going to get rich. This is really great. And as she paused in her work to kind of wipe her brow, she felt like her wedding band was not fitting very well. And she looked down at it. At the top, it looked fine. But underneath, the band was paper thin. And you understand what she was doing. As she was sanding this boulder, she was sanding off her heirloom, her gold wedding band. And as funny as that is, we can tend to do that. We can work to the bone, and we start wearing away the most important things of life. We don't have time for family or kids. Why? Because we're working. It's just too important. We can't stop for those kind of things in our pursuit of gold. We miss out on family experiences. We miss out on church involvement that could do far more for your family than a little extra gold in the pocket and the extras that come with it. The key word in Deuteronomy 5:15 is the word were. You were slaves in Egypt. You no longer are. And every day, every time you set aside for Sabbath, you're remembering that you came out of that. Don't go back to Egypt. Don't put the collar of slavery back on you. He has freed you from slavery. Observing a rest day, a Jesus rest, as I like to call it, is a way to resist the demands of Pharaoh. And there are many in this world, even today, inside your head, maybe your boss, that demand more and more and more, and maybe entice you by double time or time and a half just to get you to work more. Listen, don't miss out on the most important things. Don't wear down the heirlooms, the most important things in life just to get more. You can say no to the demands of Pharaoh. Like, no, we don't have to check our email. No, we don't have to finish that assignment. No, we're not working overtime, unless you have no choice. But taking a day of rest each week is to resist Pharaoh. Don't let Pharaoh put a collar back on you. God has taken you out of that. Live free. But a day of rest is not only to resist Pharaoh, it is to trust God. That's point number two, trust God. When you set aside a day and you're doing nothing, you have to trust that God is working on your behalf when you rest. It's what you have to do every time you nod off to sleep on your pillow. You have to say, and God's at work, and he's looking out for me, and I can rest. That takes trust. Go back to Egypt. Egypt was not a bad place to live. It's like Southern California. It's not a bad place to live. There's a lot to like in Egypt. Life was predictable. There was permanent homes. There was really good food. It must have been better than manna because they were longing for it. But there was a sense of predictability, kind of like when guys or gals go into the military, your life is dictated to you. Okay, you lose a little freedom, but there is a comfort in having things predictable, having things done for you, having things laid out. You don't have to make those decisions anymore. Same with Egypt. They're slaves, but there is a comfort to the predictability. Now, God is taking city folk and taking them into the desert where nothing is predictable to help them learn to trust. They had to trust. And the majority of them, with just a little bit of time in the desert, guess what they wanted to do? They wanted to go back into slavery. It was better to be a slave than to trust God. Better to be a slave under Pharaoh because it was predictable instead of trust God in this crazy experience out in the wilderness. And isn't that true, too, of us? We would rather trust the bank account. So we're going to work, 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 work. We're going to come under the demands of Pharaoh. We're not going to say no. We're just going to cave in back to slavery so that we can trust our future to our banks, our 401ks, or whatever it is, just more, because it's hard to trust the Lord. And setting aside a day, here's how it came into picture. Because a generation later, when the children make it to the promised land, they each get a piece of land to cultivate. It becomes theirs. They all become small business owners. And if there's going to be food on the table, they have to cultivate the fields. All you know that the self-employed, those who are like run companies, feel the weight more than their employees. Why? Because their efforts need to directly affect sales. Because if there's no sales, there's no money. If there's no money, ain't no food. Okay, that's heavy. That's a great weight. And so you can imagine now this weight upon them. To take a day off? Are you kidding me? There's so many things to do. Each week, they were to stop working in their fields. And if I was one of the people of Israel, I would think, okay, I'm gonna, my family, my kids, my wife, we're all going to take a time off. But you know what? I have hired hands. I've got foreign workers. They don't care about Sabbath day. I mean, they don't have a relationship with God. They don't need time off. But here's what it says in Deuteronomy. I think God knew their thinking, what it would be. He says in verse 14, You're to do no work. Not only you, but your sons, your daughters, your hired hands, your animals, and the foreigners among you. Everything. Shut it down. Stop the factory. But we're going to lose so much if we do. Shut the factory down. Well, how in the world am I going to get the work done? Shut the factory down. Well, what if the rain comes and the harvest, I don't bring the harvest in? I'm going to lose everything. How can I rest? Trust me. I don't know if I can survive if I don't work. Trust me. Because when you don't trust, you get filled with anxiety. When you get filled with anxiety, you can't sleep. You see the connection between trust and sleep and rest? Faith and trust is the spinal cord of our relationship with God. Taking a day off can build trust, just like tithing, giving to God, builds trust. Because you are letting go of your future, potential future, and putting it in the hands of God. If you want to grow in your relationship with God, and you're going to learn to trust Him, it's like learning to ride a bike. You put the training wheels on. God had training wheels. I want you to tithe, and I want you to set aside a day. All of that is letting go of wealth. Can I trust the Lord? A day of not working the fields, a day of not working and gaining and earning. You can trust Him. Because God said to the people of Israel, observe the Sabbath day. I want you to observe it. This is a sign of our relationship together. And the reason for taking a day off is to commemorate the freedom that I gave you. Freedom from slavery. And I want you to remember that weekly. But the Sabbath day is not binding on us like it is for Israel. The principle of rest is useful physically for you to recharge, spiritually for you to understand and learn how to trust the Lord. We all need that. Use this day to resist all the pharaohs in your life, to trust God with your future, and then finally, to celebrate freedom. Because that is what's injected into Deuteronomy chapter 5. This new meaning, this enriched meaning of Sabbath day or rest day. In our case, Jesus' rest. Is to remember the Exodus. And for us, it doesn't go back to Egypt. It goes back to what? The cross. We are to remember that we have our freedom gained because of Jesus Christ on the cross. And that we don't bear our sins. We don't bear the penalty anymore. And on that day, we can remember and commemorate our freedom. Awesome. What I'm commending to you is to celebrate freedom because you have been emancipated from Pharaoh and endless projects and vicious pace. No time for rest. Every week, God says to Israel, I want you to remember what it was like to be a slave. I want you to remember what it was like to be owned. What it was like to have no relief in sight. And I want you to recount the miraculous displays of power that brought Pharaoh to his knees. The walk through the Red Sea. I want you to remember that it is a God who cares enough to level your enemies and lead you to safety. It's a day to celebrate freedom. And if the Sabbath day is about celebrating freedom from slavery, isn't it funny when you get to the New Testament? Jesus comes along and the Sabbath day was like a lockdown, right? Because the Pharisees, in fear of breaking those laws, created a fence around breaking that law with a bunch of rules. So they were so strapped with rules that this day that was supposed to celebrate freedom doesn't sound like freedom anymore. It sounds like we're getting on the hamster wheel again. We got to do a bunch of work. We got to be really careful. It's taking life from us. It's wearing us out instead of giving life that the Sabbath day was supposed to give. Instead of celebrating freedom, we're in prison. And so that's why Jesus intentionally breaks some of the rules to get their attention, because he says Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. It's a gift to a weary body and soul, not a hamster wheel. It's a gift. So let's not strap it up with a lot of rules. But, you know, the Pharisees had a good question, though. They were trying to figure out and dictate everything, like what constitutes work. So let's have rules not to do those things to keep them away from, you know, breaking the Sabbath. That's a fair question. What constitutes work? What constitutes rest? But the thing is, there is freedom for us to figure out how to take this day of rest. It ought to be a time for rest, for unplug, and for worship. And worship meaning you celebrate your freedom in Jesus Christ. That you think further about that. I would say, if you ask me, what does it mean to take a day off? What does it mean, you know, what is work? What is rest? I'm going to do my best, but I am not the arbiter of your day off, okay? And if you sell, everyone's going to celebrate it different, because think about this. Some people think going on a jog is really refreshing. For others, it's like shooting them in the head with a gun, okay? It's all going to be different as we take this time off, take a time off to recharge. But I would say it's ceasing from what is necessary. It's ceasing from what you do when you're on the clock. You don't do it that day. You don't further that work that day. You take a break. And I would suggest you take a break from chores, from errands. Do as much as you can on another day so that you can totally relax. I know that that's going to be really hard. Because for me, Mondays, which is my rest day, was always going here and there and other places so we can get all our errands done. And that just wore me out. That wasn't a rest day for me. But you got to figure out what it does mean. But I would suggest chores and errands are done another time. You do what is restful and you do what is worshipful. Do only the things that give life, not take it away. Like all the rules, again, it's not a legalistic thing. It's like the Pharisees did, because it just extracted life instead of give life like the Sabbath was. But for Jesus' rest, for all of us, it's maybe a time to take in more sleep, worship with other believers, dinner with friends, family. You read, journal, go on walks, dance for some of you, sit around a fire, play ultimate frisbee. You know, it's interesting. Play is one of the first reflexes that go when you become an adult. Isn't it? Because of the weight and responsibility, you just don't have time to waste it on play. But yet we need that to unbuckle the harnesses and be able to just enjoy life under the grace of God. Which reminds me that those of you who have young kids, rest day is going to be problematic. And maybe you've already thought that through, like, John, what universe are you in? I got young kids. There's no way I can take a day off. Understood. Okay, so your rest day is going to look a little different, okay? Instead of this idyllic view of a rest day where you're in a hammock and you nod off to sleep as you read or watch TV, it's probably not going to be that. But you can have fun with your kids, Dad, because that was how I spent my Sabbath, was being with my kids. And it was refreshing to me because I had to learn to be a kid again, playing with them, going to every park imaginable in our area, finding the play sets and learning what a swing set was and showing them how to jump off a swing set and go as far as you can. And all those fun things that I was able to redo. Now, okay, it wasn't taking a nap, but it was unplugged from work. It was play. And it gave me life. And when I wanted to sleep or read, I just had to have them take a nap at the same time, you know, and lock the door if you have to, you know, just, you're going to stay in there and you're going to love it, okay? Or you get them in front of a TV, or, you know, for a movie for 2 hours and you relax. And the temptation will be to put another load in the laundry, or in the washer or something like that, but you cannot do that. You've got to allow yourself to rest, read, sleep, whatever it is. The temptation is going to go over to your email and check that or check your phone or updates. Do not post anything on your rest day on Twitter or Facebook. Just unplug. Unplug so that you can recharge. That's what I'm advocating. Now, again, this is an art form. You're going to learn how to do this as you practice. And there are no rules. What's good for you may not be good for me. What's restful to you is not restful to me, and vice versa. So I'm just saying, let's explore this together. You know, when I take my rest, my Jesus rest, here's how it works for me on Monday. I sleep in. I get up when I get up. I read my Bible with coffee in hand. Betsy and I generally go to Lake Geneva where we take walks. It's quiet. Few people know us there. I sit in a lawn chair, read, journal, pray. We stay away from work-related topics. We don't talk about that. We don't pick up hard conversations that are really going to agitate us. We keep those off the table. That's not a time for that. We are powered down to refresh. And I love it, and I commend it to you. Not because you have to, but because it's a gift from God. And learn how to rest well, because as you learn how to rest well, physically you're going to recuperate, but spiritually it's going to help you because your faith needs time to pause, reflect, do something different, worship, celebrate your freedom from sin and judgment because of Jesus Christ. All of that you need, a day to celebrate freedom. Do you know that rest? Do you do that well? You know, some you know who you are, who, I mean, you're hearing 100 different Pharaoh voices saying, you're lazy, get up, you got stuff to do, stop wasting time. Some of you are like, I never hear that voice, right? Bless you. I hear some other voices. But learn how to say no to those. Learn how to resist Pharaoh and his ilk and all his little minions demanding more production, more, 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 with less, less, less. You need time to rest. And by taking that day off, you're also going to learn how to trust. Trust God with your future. It's in his hands. You know, you're going to be more secured by taking a day off than what you could produce that day working. Just like prayer. What, you know, you can fret, 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 but he's asking you to come and pray. Trust me, because 5 minutes in prayer, God can do more than you can do fretting for 3 hours. He wants us to learn how to trust. Put the training wheels on, learn to trust, take a day off, and rest. And then, Christian, the more you allow Christ to penetrate your thinking, the more rest you will experience. I think it was Augustine, one of the most important leaders in the Christian faith in the 4th century. He said it this way. He says, it was a prayer to God, you have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they find rest in you. I'm going to read that again. Because Jesus is the source. You can go fishing, you can go boating, and still be restless because the center point is Jesus. He is the one that brings all the rest to you. Because inside us all is this need for recognition, for importance, to be valued, to be appreciated for what we do. And we work hard and produce because we want people to see that we're not failures, we're not losers, we're successful, and we want to move up the chain. And it's go time, it's production time, and we need to rest. The only way we can rest is to be filled with Jesus. Christian, you too. Because you know it here. But you've got to contemplate it enough so that it changes the way you act and the way you operate So less restlessness and more Jesus rest. I'll say it again. Augustine said, you have made us for yourself. We were made for you, God. And our hearts are restless until they find rest in you. Better yet, Jesus said, come unto me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, weighted down, and I will give you rest, because Jesus is the center point of rest. Why don't you bow your heads?